Indeed.com/hire.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up, we're going to meet Heather Booth, a veteran of the civil rights movement, a feminist leader, and one of the country's most effective progressive organizers. She's the subject of a new film that's going to be shown tonight in Tampa. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, two listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we touched on many topics, including the upcoming March for Our Lives. But the comments we got at the end of the show where we looked at the latest allegations of inappropriate sexual episodes involving the president and the former chief of the CIA's concerns that the Russians must have something on President Trump. Here's what two listeners had to say.
Edwin from Tampa just listened to the last part of the 11 o'clock show, and really make a good case for defunding NPR with the hatred that you're bringing for us. So very disappointed in WMNF. Been a listener for quite some time, and I wish you would tone it down a little bit, and even possibly let the other side make their case instead of being so one-sided.
Caught the tail end of your show today, Wednesday, and I, too, want to reiterate the caller, Gary, who called in, was amazing. That man, you need to record that. That should be on PBS. He's marvelous. He's like a David Brooks.
Well, there you have two listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. Our guest today is Heather Booth, a longtime progressive activist who's the subject of a new film that will be shown tonight at the Jewish Community Center in Tampa. The film is called Heather Booth, Changing the World. It'll be shown as part of the Jewish Film Festival beginning at 6:30. And the film covers Heather's extraordinary life in organizing for progressive social change, from her involvement with SNCC during the civil rights era through the days before Roe v. Wade, when she established an underground abortion referral service, to organizing for unions and jobs for justice, to establishing the Midwest Academy, a school for organizers, and helping Elizabeth Warren found the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. Here is the trailer to the film about Heather Booth.
You have to go through life with more than just passion for change. You need a strategy, and your plan better include voting. You see, change requires more than righteous anger. It requires a program, and it requires organizing.
They said to me, Elizabeth, if you really want to push for this consumer agency, you got to get organized. And I said, great. How? They said, I've got two words for you. Heather Booth.
I view my role as an organizer. To be an organizer, you have to love people and hate injustice.
I was one of a number of Northern students that went down to do voter registration. We saw the value of working for a goal that was much larger than ourselves. We saw how you really could create change, change people's lives, change the reality by taking action.
What makes you think you stand a chance up against those kind of forces?
Well, first of all, it's a David and Goliath fight. We should remember that sometimes David wins.
The threshold belief of organizers is that it is grassroots, ordinary people putting pressure on elected officials at all levels that is the key ingredient for changing policy.
It's not a theoretical thing. It's teaching the practices and principles, and then making sure people then go out and do it.
Before Heather, we didn't have a way to teach strategy.
If you look at significant times in the movement, Heather is there someplace. I mean, it's like Zelig.
I took the challenge seriously. I set up a training center called Midwest Academy.
So what is a strategy? I said,
it'll never work. You can't teach organizing. And she said, well, why don't you come out here and see what we're doing? So I did, and discovered that it did work, much to my surprise.
Imagine a world if you're a single mother. You don't live in poverty.
Imagine a world where if you're a young black man, you're not racially profiled by the police. That world is only possible if we organize, and only if we organize.
And the bell has sounded, bringing to a close an extraordinary day on Wall Street.
They were spending literally more than $1 million a day to lobby against the financial reforms and principally the consumer agency. Heather got our groups together and just kept growing the number of groups, kept showing them what was possible.
The question now isn't, are you willing to die for freedom? It's also, will you live for freedom and build organization and support movements that will make change?
Well, that's the trailer to the new film, Heather Booth, Changing the World. It will be shown tonight at the JCC in Tampa at 6:30. And the subject of the film, Heather Booth, is live in the studio with us. Heather, welcome back to WMNF. So nice to see you.
I am so glad to be here, Rob. It is always great to be on your program because you're such a voice for democracy and justice in the society. And we need more of both right now.
Thank you for saying that. I like that line in the trailer. A better world is only possible only if we organize. I like that line.
And we can change this world and make it better if we organize. We've done it in the past. We need to do it now.
What is a community organizer? That's really what you do. That's who you train. What does it mean to be a community organizer?
Organizing means you listen to what people care about. You find out what their interests are. And based on shared values, what would they be able to do together to make this a better world? So there are key elements. One is understanding what really are their concerns, not just our concerns. And secondly, building relationships with people. So you help them find their voice, tell their story, and then gather together for power so that together we are stronger. And design a plan that helps move you forward. So those three elements, based on our values of self-interest, based on values, relationships, and building joint power.
You know, I just read another biography of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and one of the things that he did when he went around before he was elected was he drove around and found out what was on the minds of farmers and maids and factory workers and average people on the street before he came up with the ideas that he would run on. It sounds like...
You know, what we would give for a time like that, with a president like that. You know, there's a quote that's sometimes attributed to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, though I actually think Frances Perkins, the Secretary of Labor, said it. Who was a woman, the first woman Secretary of Labor, and one perhaps the best in our history, though the Tom Perez, the Secretary of Labor under President Obama, was also very good. And we helped make it good because of people's power that was there to support it. But I was going to say this quote that's sometimes attributed to Roosevelt is a group of labor leaders came in to meet with them, and it's purported that the response was, "You've convinced me, now go out and make me do it." So it means you need popular support. You need people to show what they really want. And in a small D democracy, like we still have as long as we can keep it so, we need to organize to hold our elected officials accountable, to support them when they're moving in the right direction, and to make sure they represent the will of all the people.
Tell me about growing up, because I want to find out how you became a progressive, how you became a community organizer. Tell me about growing up, because I read that you were born in a military hospital.
My father was in the military in Mississippi. That's where he was based in World War II. But I really grew up in New York and then lived much of my life in Chicago, and now live in Washington, D.C. I grew up in a very loving, caring family who had what I view as good family values. They believed love was at the center. I think that that's what we have to remember. and believed that all people should be treated with dignity and respect.
Were your parents religious?
We're a Jewish family, and there's history, culture, and tradition that moves us towards social justice. Passover's coming up. You know, it's a story of for 40 years you're in the desert. And in fact, no one who was on that trip from oppression, from bondage into freedom, no one on that trip made it because we were of an old culture and we needed those in the new culture. The youth needed to lead us forward. Mm-hmm. But the youth then can lead us into a land of freedom. Also, there are parts in the Bible that say, you know, justice, justice thou shalt pursue. Saying justice twice, one of the few times in the Bible it says justice or a word twice, because it's that important. So there are parts of the tradition, the history, the struggle, and belief that we need to struggle for freedom.
Which came first, your activism in the civil rights movement, or your activism as a feminist, or your activism as an anti-war activist? Which came first?
You know, I view that all of those are bound up together. And what really came first was believing that love is at the center, that you love people and you hate injustice, and that you also need to work to make this a better society. What I first was active on was civil rights issues. In 1960, I joined the civil rights movement in support of demonstrations against Woolworths, when Woolworths wouldn't, for those younger now, group like Target. And they had lunch counters, and they weren't letting African Americans sit at the lunch counters in the South. I joined in support of that. And then found my way to SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And in 1964, went to Mississippi, where there was a project to shine a light for the whole country about how poor black people were treated in Mississippi. And they recruited Northern students. I came down. I was at the University of Chicago. And the summer project got notoriety because, as many of you in the listening audience probably know, there were three young men, Andrew Goodman, James Cheney, and Michael Schwerner, who were three of the volunteers, and they were killed at the hands of the Klan. What people may not know is that during that summer, while they were looking for the three young men, they found the bodies of other black men whose hands had been bound or feet chopped off, one thrown in the Tallahatchie or Pearl River. And those murders, when they even found the bodies, weren't investigated till years later, because black lives didn't matter in Mississippi in 1964. But because people organized, by the end of the year, there was a Voting Rights Act, and Mississippi now has more African-American elected officials than any other state in the country. And I mention it so we remember that even now, in times of such peril and such demoralization for many, because so many of our rights are being trampled on, because so many lives are being trampled on, that even out of the most difficult times, out of the times of greatest peril, we often make the greatest progress, but only when we organize.
I should say that Mickey Schwerner's brother, Steve, was my dean of students at college when college. And, we're listening to an interview with Heather Booth. The film about Heather's life is going to premiere at the, have its local premiere at the Jewish Film Festival tonight at the JCC in Tampa, Changing the World. Heather is a longtime progressive activist and the founder of the Midwest Academy. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. When you went to Mississippi for the Freedom Summer, were the folks who you signed up to vote, were they afraid?
There was an enormous fear, but there also was great courage and great belief that together we could change this oppressive system. You know, it's interesting, the people you say who we signed up to vote, we went with people to register using the system that was set up for registration and then for voting. But in Shaw, Mississippi, the town where I was, doing a lot of the registration, I was in three towns, Rollville with Mrs. Hamer, Shaw, and Cleveland with Amzie Moore. Some people may know those names. In Shaw, we were arrested the first time we tried to do a voter registration drive. We weren't protesting. We weren't trying to break a law. But we realized the way they were enforcing the law, they wouldn't let us do registration.
What was the charge?
I don't even remember the charge. They picked us up. They actually let us out of jail by nightfall, which also was a dangerous time because there was such intimidation by the Klan and others. But they basically were stopping the registration. We then decided to create a Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, and we would register our own folks, people who wanted real representation. And we took that challenge to the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party has been transformed over time, now with racially balanced and gender-balanced delegations, because people organized. The Republican Party still has quite a way to go.
You were an early feminist. I saw that you read Betty Friedan's The Feminist Mystique, and you organized a way for people to get abortions. When abortion was illegal, you found a way for people to get referrals. Tell us a little bit about that.
I want to give people a sense of what life was like in the late 60s and early 70s. Just as one example, a friend of mine had been raped at knife point in her bed in off-campus housing while I was in college. We went with her to student health to get a gynecological exam. She was told student health didn't cover gynecological exams, and she was given a lecture on her promiscuity. We sat with her. They called it a sit-in. We had learned from the civil rights movement. Now, over time, because people organized, women can get gynecological coverage under student health, and now with ACA and with healthcare still part of our American life, you can get healthcare coverage. You can get gynecological coverage if you're a citizen. We have to, lots still things to change within the law, but we have to preserve that. Because people organized, we won those victories. Now it's under attack with Planned Parenthood coming under attack, with reproductive rights themselves coming under attack, with healthcare coming under attack. But we can sustain and make greater changes if we organize. What happened later when I was in college was that a friend of mine was pregnant and was not ready to have a child and was really suicidal. She just felt she could not manage this at that point. She wanted an abortion. I was asked to help, and I hadn't thought about the issue before. Maybe I was more innocent, and it was a more innocent time. But I found a doctor through the Medical Committee for Human Rights, which was the medical arm of the civil rights movement. I found an extraordinary doctor, T.R.M. Howard, and there's a book on him called Black Maverick. He had been a civil rights leader in Mississippi who came up to Chicago when his name appeared on a Klan death list, and he set up a clinic for women in Chicago on 63rd Street called Friendship Clinic. I didn't know this at the time, but I called him up and arranged for the procedure for my friend. It was successful, and I really didn't think much more about it at the time. But a little while later, word had spread and someone else called. I made the connection again and thought it was a coincidence. Word spread, someone else called. And I realized there was a real issue. We needed to do something about it. And I set up a system. It's what an organizer does. And enough women came through. I learned about what's involved in the procedure. I learned how to care for the women, support them. I learned how to negotiate on the price, on the quality, on the care. And I called the system Jane.
But it was illegal to have an abortion at this time.
In fact, three people talking about having an abortion was a conspiracy to commit a felony. Between 1965 and 1973, when Roe became the law, because people organized, the women of Jane themselves learned how and performed 11,000 abortions. I hope we don't go back to that period. I hope we keep abortion safe and legal, and we support the women who are facing this as a decision about when or whether to have a child. That's, by the way, how Roe v. Wade was argued. Not for abortion, but for women should have the right to decide when or whether to have a child, to have full participation in the society.
You were tempting, or you were tempting fate there, in that you risked arrest and you risked prosecution for doing this referral service. You mentioned that you were arrested during the Freedom Summer when you were in Mississippi. How many times would you say you've been arrested?
I've been arrested, I think it's 9 times. The first one was on that voting rights situation where it wasn't a protest. We were just trying to carry out the law, but those who were enforcing the law were themselves carrying it out illegally. I was arrested in a protest against the war in Vietnam at a draft board. I was arrested in a protest for labor rights in Pittston, where there was a miner strike. And then for several times an early arrest around South Africa. My husband, Paul Booth, was the National Secretary of SDS, and he had led and helped to organize the first sit-in demonstrations against apartheid in South Africa when 10 U.S. banks were bailing out apartheid. And this was in the late 60s, 1960s, and was arrested then. And then some other times, and then around immigration reform. The last time that I was arrested, the most recent time, was January 17th. There was a group demonstrating in support of the DACA, the Dreamers, and it was Jews for Dreamers. And the Dreamers had asked groups of to stand up in support of them and sit down in support of them in a Capitol building. The reason I remember that day so well is it's also the day that my husband, who's been my partner in this organizing for 50 years and more, Paul Booth, my husband who had been the national secretary of the largest anti-war organization in the country in the 60s, Students for a Democratic Society, my husband, Paul, who was the assistant to the president of AFSCME, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, was a trade unionist for 43 years. I remember the date because it's also the date that he so unexpectedly died. Mm. And we knew he was ill. He was in the hospital, but thought he would have treatment and be well. And he knew I had committed on this sit-in and thought I still should go. He wanted me to go. But I came back. I was at the hospital. And the last conversation we had was about how joyful he was for the lives of the Dreamers, that we might move towards a pathway to citizenship and welcoming strangers in our society.
How did you meet your husband, Paul?
That's an interesting story. I was a student at the University of Chicago in 1966, and there was a process where the university was ranking male students according to grade point average and giving that rank to the selective service system so that then the men would be drafted. And we knew there was a relationship between the rank of your grades and class and race, and we thought the university shouldn't cooperate or collaborate with a selective service system. So we signed a petition. There were petitions and thousands of names on it. We were presenting it to the administration, where we go outside of the administration building to present it to them. They weren't going to meet with us. It started to rain. We go inside. It keeps raining. We sit down. We had asked the national leader of the anti-war movement, the student anti-war movement, to come over and speak to us, and that was Paul. He said he had heard about me and he was looking for me. We sat next to each other. It was a very intense several days together on the floor of the administration building. And after 3 days, he asked me to marry him. After 5 days, I said yes. We'd wait 1 year. And we had been married 50 years. I'm grateful for those years. And I'm grateful to be able to carry on the vision and values and love that we had for each other in this movement for justice.
And you had several kids together?
We have two remarkable kids. One's a teacher. I view it as a front line urban teaching. He's in Chicago. And one is a lawyer who works for generally the starving clients.
You've done this kind of activism for more than 50 years.
And by the way, and we've got 5 grandchildren who are just the joy of our lives.
What drove you and Paul to stay loyal to that kind of progressive activism that you started in the 1960s?
I love doing this work. We are so grateful for the lives we've had and hope to continue having. We love the friends we've had, the community we've built, our family, and the work we do. I've tried other things, but nothing has given the joy of seeing people finding their voice, gaining power, and seeing that when we organize, we do change the world. Right now, the reason that there are any rights and protections in the workforce is because people organized. The reason that we have the healthcare we have is because people have organized. The reason that all of us are at least recognized as that we should be equally parts of society is because we've organized. We have much further to go, but the progress we make is because we organize. I hope all of those listening will join in mobilizing, in resisting, and also in organizing and then moving it into elections so we magnify our power together.
Our guest is Heather Booth, and she has been at the heart, at the center of progressive social change for more than 50 years. There's a new film about her. It's called Heather Booth Changing the World. It shows tonight at the JCC in Tampa at 6:30. It's part of the Jewish Film Festival. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. She was involved in the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, the feminist movement. She's been at the forefront of organizing for unions and jobs. And she established something called the Midwest Academy. I want to ask you about that. What is the Midwest Academy?
It's a training center for organizers based in Chicago, but it has sessions around the country. And it's worked with groups ranging from Planned Parenthood and NAACP and Sierra Club to little groups you wouldn't have heard of to hopefully groups in Tampa. In fact, last night I was at a session and someone came up and said, he's now with the Sierra Club, and he's been using the Midwest Academy approach. He had previously had worked with FCAN, Florida Consumer Action Network, and they use the Midwest Academy approach. So there are people all over the country. And it teaches both the skills and the history of organizing, but also the strategy, how you figure out what to do when you don't know what to do. For those who are interested, there's a website, www.midwestacademy.com, and there's a book, Organizing for Social Change. You can get it often in progressive bookstores or ask for it, and you can also get it online.
We get a lot of calls from people saying they're planning to build a road through our neighborhood, or they're planning to build a big development next to our house, or you know, they want to build this electric utility plant in our quiet neighborhood, and folks often call us up, and we try to do a news story about it. But I think they're, you know, they've been living their lives kind of quietly, and suddenly this big change is imposing on their community or their, you know, neighborhood, and they want to know what to do. What does community organizing help you learn the skills to deal with these kind of issues?
It's exactly what you need facing a situation like that. I'll give you one example. When you mention a road going through a neighborhood, in Chicago, there was an attempt to build a road that would have knocked down 30,000 homes. and destroyed those communities. It would have gone north and south, east, west and east through the city. And we united people on that issue who had been fighting with each other, people who had been on the opposite side of racial issues, opposite side of other issues that tore the city apart, in fact. And because the city had been torn apart by racial conflict, black and white racial conflict, this was in the early 70s, the theme of the fight was black roads, white lines, united against the Crosstown Expressway. We won that fight, and we built greater unity and understanding, and people found their voice who didn't have a voice before. So you not only can stop what the community doesn't want, you can build for a positive good in the future and find transformation yourself.
Well, you know, that group Acorn that was around a few years ago and then destroyed because of a surreptitiously recorded video, its aim was to unite people of color along with white people in communities wherever they were organizing, trying to bring those folks together.
Acorn was a remarkable group, and it had hundreds of thousands of mostly poor, black, white, Latino people coming together in neighborhoods and forming a national force. They were brought down by lying, deceitful videos that were made about them that later, after they had lost their support because of the bad publicity, it was shown that it was deceitful. And James O'Keefe, who was behind it.
This is the filmmaker who surreptitiously recorded video.
Yes, and then edited the video so that you didn't see what really happened, but you had a false impression of it. And he's done the same thing to PBS. He did the same thing to Planned Parenthood. He's done it actually to many, many different groups. But he himself is now getting exposed. And there's a new website. Lauren Windsor is someone who has this website exposing O'Keefe and Breitbart, part of the source behind Steve Bannon and others from this alt-right who have been so deceptive. By the way, on Acorn, there's a new movie out about Acorn, and John Atlas, who wrote a book about Acorn, his son made this movie. I think it's premiering in New York this weekend.
You started the Midwest Academy, and my understanding is that you were using the principles of Saul Alinsky. Saul Alinsky showed up on Fox News frequently in the last 4 or 5 years. I want to talk about that. But first of all, you wanted to show people the techniques of organizing maybe against, you know, a road in their community or whatever project, or maybe in favor of some project like a playground or whatever. Tell us about Saul Alinsky. Did you know him, the organizer, who wrote a book called Rules for Radicals?
One thing I just want to clarify, on Midwest Academy, the approach that we take at the Academy is a combination of many kinds of organizing. No, that's great. And it certainly includes some of the important lessons that Alinsky shared with the public and that are very important. I'll come back to that in a sec. But also movement principles, values, and also an understanding of how you design strategy and how we are part of broader movements for change, from civil rights, women's rights, immigration, labor, and then tying it into elections. So it was a somewhat broader approach. But Alinsky made incredible contributions to social change. He believed, just as we've been talking about here, that if you organize, you can change the world, and you need to organize. His focus was largely you need to get angry, and you need to show your anger. And much of society tells you, you should be polite, you shouldn't speak up, you shouldn't get angry. Well, there's a lot to get angry about. And so he said you should rub raw the sores of discontent. and brought people together, helped them see their shared interest, and helped them see who is really causing the problem, and then target those people and move for a common good. So Rules for Radicals, Reveille for Radicals, other books that he wrote are really a valuable contribution.
Hmm. There was quite an attempt, especially within the last 4 or 5 years on Fox News, to paint anybody who had read Rules for Radicals or used the organizing principles of Saul Alinsky to any extent, that they were beyond the pale, that they were, you know, people that just wanted to have a Soviet-style U.S., for instance, and all that. And I'm sure you watched those Fox News reports and heard about Sean Hannity and others talking about community organizers and Rules for Radicals. What would you say?
You know, in this, in the movie that you mentioned, Changing the World, that's going to show tonight, there's a clip from a Fox News program that is listed as the Tree of Revolution. And there's one branch that has the nonviolent branch and one branch that has the violent branch. And Saul Alinsky is kind of at the base of it. And then they have me being the branch off for the nonviolent branch. And they have another branch going off on the violent branch. And then they have an acorn right in the middle.
So what do you think of all that?
I think that there's a lot that needs to be changed in this society, a lot that needs to be protested. This is a time of incredible peril. That people will be very severely harmed. Families will be separated. Rights will be trampled. And some people will be wrongly imprisoned and die, particularly because of the current climate and the hate and fear that's being spread. And so there's a lot to organize on. It's also a time of incredible inspiration. People are coming together. This demonstrations that are going to happen this weekend with the Parkland students, we cheer them on. I'll be back in Washington at that point and joining in the march there. But there's fight for $15 an hour, a living wage. Probably even needs more, but at least so that people who work hard don't have to live in poverty. The fight of the dreamers, again, another fight led by young people. The fight for health care, for tipped workers. In fact, there just was a victory for tipped workers in the current omnibus bill. One of the victories, and there were a number of victories in this bill, as bad as it is, because people organized. There was an attempt by the Department of Labor to take away tips of tipped workers who make only $2.14 an hour,
yeah, that sounds
I think
right.
is the wage.
Yeah.
$2.14 is what a tipped worker gets. And even those tips that they get, the current Department of Labor, then said management can then redistribute its tips, the tips, and in fact even keep the tips. And that was excluded under this omnibus bill. A small victory, but in fact a victory reflecting the organizing power, in this case with a group called Restaurant Opportunity Center. So when we organize, even in perilous times, we can find inspiring results and make this a better world.
Well, we're talking with longtime community organizer Heather Booth. In fact, she's been called one of the most effective progressive organizers in the country, and she's got a long history dating back to the 1960s, starting with the Civil Rights Movement. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. A film about her is showing tonight at the JCC in Tampa, the Jewish Community Center in Tampa, at 6:30. And Heather will be doing a talk back, too, after that. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. One more question about community organizing, and I'll let it go. But on the one hand, you've got people on Fox News really fearing community organizers and fearing Saul Alinsky or anybody who's, you know, taken lessons from Saul Alinsky's work. And, you know, there's this tremendous fear on the right. And then on the other hand, especially when President Obama was running for office, and on among the things on his resume, including law professor, was community organizer. And so, if you tuned into Fox, they said, oh, community organizer, it doesn't really teach you anything about the world. You can't be president of the United States if that's on your resume. And on the other hand, they've got this tremendous fear of people who are community organizers and may be aligned with Saul Alinsky. So what's your take on that?
Well, what they really fear is they fear people getting together, raising their voices, unifying. They fear that unity overall. They fear democracy. They fear justice in this society, because if there were justice, there would not be the kind of greed that dominates our politics now and dominates so much of our way of life. There wouldn't have been this tax bill that was a $1.5 trillion giveaway to the wealthiest corporations and millionaires and billionaires. So those, the smaller number who are in power, they fear the people rising. And what organizing is it's people rising for democracy, justice, freedom.
Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. A lot of emails come in, and I can't read them all. Some are long. Here's part of an email. I don't know if I can do it justice, but this is from Ramseed, and says, good interview. I happen to catch your mention of Betty Friedan's groundbreaking book, The Feminine Mystique. You said the feminist instead of the feminine. Thank you. And I was friends with her ex-husband, Carl Friedan, who was my neighbor in Sarasota from 1991 until he passed away in 2005 from prostate cancer. I spent years having cocktails each evening and watching NBC News. He was further to the left of me, and I even got him to watch Bill O'Reilly each evening after the news. He loved to wag his finger at the TV and say, go F yourself at Bush or O'Reilly. Okay, that's part of Ramseed's long email. Thank you very much for that. And Dennis writes this, I'm sure you know you're in the presence of greatness. She would be a fabulous president of the United States. Have you ever thought about running for office yourself?
You know, there's so many wonderful candidates that are now developing, and actually what you all do in Florida will affect what we have around the country for Senate, for governor, for the local positions. So please be involved in those elections. Take these values into the elections and do organize. For me, I'm glad to be in a position of helping those who are running, support them, to raise the issues and to ensure that there's a popular base to support and hold accountable those elected officials, so that we move towards the vision that we want to have.
Heather, you know there's a lot of cynicism out there, and people feel like they can't really do anything. I mean, they, especially with all the money in politics and the decisions by the Supreme Court, like Citizens United, that they say, look, I can't organize my community, or I can't organize my friends around the issues that we care about. I mean, some people do, and there's lots of organizations here. We just heard some on the Women's Show a few minutes ago, young people organizing for the rally on Saturday. But what do you say to people who are cynical and say, there's too much money in politics and we can't fight the money in politics?
There certainly is too much money in politics. But we will only win when we do organize to fight it. As a friend of mine, Alice Palmer, said, if you don't do politics, politics does you. We need to organize so that we determine what those politics will look like, who they'll represent, and have our voices present.
I was talking to a couple of congressional candidates the other day. They were Democrats, and both seemed to indicate that they didn't think that single payer was a possibility. If you were to advise somebody to try to get single payer in the U.S., what steps, I mean, have you advised people? What steps do you think it would take to get single-payer health care like a Canadian-style system here in the U.S.?
I think we start with our vision and our values. We want high-quality health care accessible to all. And then the question of exactly how we get there may be many different routes for how we get there. We know that it's based in organizing. We know it's based in having a strategic plan that both is on-the-ground organizing those people who are inside of the system, as well as organizing to move our concerns into elections. And I think that Medicare for All is becoming an increasingly potent approach and supported approach, and it all will depend on how strong we are. I do think a prerequisite is that we'll end up with a Democratic House, Senate, and President, and other appointments to a Supreme Court. I didn't start out as a partisan. It's so interesting. In fact, I sort of was anti-electoral for the first many years of my life. I had worked in Mississippi. I thought I didn't want part of any of the elected officials I saw there. I worked in the original Mayor Daley's Chicago. I didn't want part of that.
These were all Democrats. System. You met Democrats in the South and Democrats in the North that you didn't like.
And the Republicans were even worse. And I thought, who wants to be part of that? But then I realized in 1980, and again, as my friend Alice Palmer said, if you don't do politics, politics does you. And I realized it's true. People who share these values need to run. We need to run in smart campaigns. We need to support people in those campaigns. We need to change what people think in areas that are not currently progressive. So that you could have a Connor Lamb win in Pennsylvania with a strong pro-union base. He may not agree with everything I agree with on issues of guns or on other concerns. But he was able to win because he supported the people in the district who wanted a strong union. We saw the same thing with Doug Jones in Alabama. So part of our effort is we need to change the formula of and do persuasion work of those who might be for us but don't see how we're going to improve their lives. And we critically have to do the engagement work of people who might be with us, but their lives are so difficult, they don't see that it's worth being involved. And so work in what we're calling the rising American electorate or the new American majority, communities of color, young people, women. And doing that outreach, both are needed. Mobilization, engagement, and persuasion. And together, I think we will build this new progressive and small d Democratic majority.
You talked about the rising American electorate. Is that sort of along the lines of John Judas's book and Rui Teixeira's book a few years ago, The Emerging Democratic Majority?
That's an important book, and I think people should look at it. I worked for a number of years with a group called the Voter Participation Center, which does amongst the most groundbreaking work, particularly engaging this rising American electorate. The book that John and Rui did, they've both written updates on it to say that it's nothing gets taken for granted. No change is going to happen just by demographics. It happens only when we organize. Also, any one approach may not be enough. We need many things to make the change that we want to see. I think we need both the mobilization, the engagement of the communities who feel they've been left out of the prosperity, and those who ended up voting for Trump, not seeing that there was another alternative for them.
You know, I had John Judas on my show about a year ago, and he said what the Democrats missed in the 2016 election is that they forgot that the white working class was still important to the Democratic coalition.
I think both parts really matter. Both communities of color, African American, Latino, Asian American, young people, unmarried women particularly. That's the rising American electorate, and engaging there is incredibly important. We also need to attend to working class people in general, white working class people also. We need to make new majorities, both for electoral purposes and also for the issues we care about, and also because we care about a unified country for all of our people.
So in uniting all those groups, what do you think the number one issue is this fall in the elections?
There are actually so many issues. I think in part it's probably the economy and having decent jobs with decent wages.
Do you think that's why Trump won? Is that Trump was subtly appealing to people, saying your jobs aren't paying you enough and your wages are too low and I'm going to do something about it?
Well, first of all, Hillary got 3 million more votes, so that who actually won is even partly a question, but with the Electoral College that we've got, he won within the narrow definition. And he's got the power to exercise. We're suffering from it. I think there are many reasons he won. I do think that he addressed the economic hardship that people were facing in a way that was more persuasive. I think that Democrats need to do the same, need to address the same issues, but with alternatives that really will solve the problems and are not just distractions. I also think he won because he appealed to a racism and antagonism and blamed the people below. You know, it's who's causing these problems? Is it the people who are the millionaires and billionaires and largest corporations who got those tax breaks now? Or the people who are struggling to find their way in the country? And I think there are a number of factors. I also think he attended to some of the ground games in particular states, and we need to take all states seriously and take nothing and no one for granted.
What do you make of the young people that are going to be marching in Washington, D.C. this Saturday?
I'm going to join them. I hope everyone in the listening audience joins in. We need to stand with them and stand for sensible gun laws, stand for our lives, stand for our future.
Well, Heather Booth, thank you so much for coming back to WMNF. It's so great to have you here.
Rob, this was great to be on. I also want to, I know you're about to introduce Shelley Reback, this remarkable organizer who Tampa is so lucky to have in your midst. And I know she'll make the connection between the general issues we've talked about and the local issues and how people can get involved.
And so Shelley Reback has been sitting quietly in the background. She was the one that helped bring Heather Booth here to the Jewish Film Festival, and she brought Heather over today. Thanks for coming by, Shelley.
My pleasure, and I want to thank the Jewish Film Festival and their board for bringing the film here. Specifically, I want to thank Sarah Scher for being instrumental in that process and bringing Heather here to be with us for the Tampa premiere of the film, Heather Booth, Changing the World, 6:30 p.m. at the Brian Glazer Family JCC. Tickets are $10, and we hope everybody who's been listening to the show will join us tonight.
All right, and there's going to be a talk back with Heather at the end of the night?
That's right.
Yeah. All right, so that's tonight, 6:30, and the JCC is on both Armenia and Howard Avenue.
Right, entrance is on Howard, right before the interstate, south of the interstate.
Okay, so just north of Kennedy and south of the interstate.
Correct.
Well, thank you so much. So Heather, when people call up the Midwest Academy and want more training, what's the biggest demand you have now? Is it labor? Is it feminists? Is it...
People are coming from every kind of area. It's an inspiring time. I mentioned before it's a perilous time. But it also is inspiring because people are standing up, resisting, and we need to move from resistance into organizing and engaging in all communities and then move that into elections and show our full power.
And if people want to find the Midwest Academy online, where's the best place to find it?
It's www.midwestacademy.com. Partly the midwestacademy.org was taken by another group. And we hope you'll pursue the organizing in your own life, coming together, finding your voice, standing up, standing united. And I look forward to celebrating our joint victories together.
Ron sent in an email in jest. He says, I'm in West Tampa. When I grow up, I want to be like your guest. Kudos to her and thanks, says Ron. So, Ron, thanks. Thanks for that email.
Glad to stand with you, Ron, any day.
Ron, how old are you? That's what I want to know. So the film is Heather Booth, Changing the World. It'll be shown as part of the Jewish Film Festival tonight at 6:30. Everybody's welcome, and it's at the JCC on North Howard in Tampa. If you want to comment about today's show, if you want to comment about anything you've heard here, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play those comments back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. And again, call this number, 813-238-8001. and record your message on extension 115. Stay tuned for the Midpoint program coming up next with Mitch Perry, and Mitch's guest, I think, is going to be Joe Redner. He's going to talk about his attempts to grow his own medical marijuana. Joe is famous in these parts, and so Joe, I see Joe's in the studio, too. So stick around for that, an interview with Joe Redner and medical marijuana on the Mitch Perry Midpoint Program. You're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg. Here's the latest news from NPR.